960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
.908 on your Monday. A little late to get here, but we are in the nine. Ryan Pinder here till 10 o'clock. Jim Rome will get going. We will have that Jays game on your radio tonight. Join in progress at 6 o'clock. They're cruising. 16 wins in their last 23 in a playoff spot as play opens today. You want to talk about that? We could do so, although tomorrow's probably better. We could celebrate a championship won last night by the Penguins and discuss that, I suppose. And we'll do exactly that with our first guest of the week, Mr. Darren Haynes, famous from 80feet.ca. Haynesy, how was the viewing last night?
Yeah, it was good. It was, I wasn't surprised to see Pittsburgh bounce back like that. I didn't think, the way they carried that series, I thought it wasn't going to go to seven, get that early start. When San Jose did get that one, you kind of wondered, but you only had about a minute to wonder.
Yeah.
Then they had the lead again. So
minute 19 of wondering, and then it was another Pittsburgh lead. I think they outplayed the Sharks for six games. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm with you there. And what's interesting to me is it brings up the differences that do exist between conferences, doesn't it? You know, San Jose looked like the team to beat after you saw them playing against the Western opponents and then just matched up against a completely differently built team. Mm-hmm. In Pittsburgh, it was just a night and day difference. San Jose just didn't have anything going like they did against, leading up to that. So it's one of those I think if you're an organization, are you trying to build your team to get out of the West, or are you trying to build your team to have a shot at the Stanley Cup? And it almost feels like there's a bit of a conflict there.
I don't know. Is it a coincidence or are there different styles? Because I would think if Washington had gotten through, there's a big physical team, not unlike the Kings that they faced in round one, not unlike the Blues they saw in round three. And heck, it's been Chicago coming out of the West all the time, and that's not a big, heavy physical team. I mean, I think it's less to do with conference and more that the team they faced, this was the quickest that they saw all spring.
Yeah, and I think if Tampa Bay got through instead of Pittsburgh, I don't know if this thing ends any differently. I think it's still probably going to the East. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I'm and it's good. My goodness, that scar still from when the Jacques Lemaire Devils won the Stanley Cup and everybody went to stifle in defense. So hopefully the Pittsburgh blueprint has been put out there in the public domain and teams will follow because it's a pretty exciting hockey team.
So what's the blueprint then? If you want to dumb this down for all the GMs listening around the league.
Well, I think you're looking at, four lines deep. Defenseman that can move the puck. You're not fixated on building a fourth line that can run teams out of the rink. I mean, their penalty minute leader was Chris Letang with 66 penalty minutes. I mean, so it's they're just not built as some teams have kind of. Some people think you traditionally build teams. So I just like the fact that, and they're not afraid to go with a young goalie, which is something that you kind of take as a, that's interesting. Got a shot, went with it. Maybe you don't have to be a veteran goalie to be successful in the NHL. So the speed and more speed, and just finding those value guys, right? Like think about how many times throughout that series we heard the name Connor Sheary. Here's a guy making NHL minimum wage. And those are the kind of guys you're going to need. And in some regards, Pittsburgh isn't built much differently than Calgary will be built, where they're going to have a lot of money concentrated on a few players. And you're going to have to find those value guys, find those guys that can bring different parts to the team, can play different roles, and contribute and play 10, 12 minutes, like not 5 or 6 minutes on your fourth line, but roll those four lines. And it's that depth that really did it for Pittsburgh, I think.
Yeah. I don't know if this team would have won pre-lockout. If you can clutch and hold, that's, I think, probably a much easier team to play because their speed's eliminated. To dive into the Berkey lexicon, this is not a truculent hockey club at all.
Nope, exactly.
Does that scare you? Doesn't that worry you a little? I mean, he continues to talk about size and, we had a season ticket holder event the other week. He was suggesting no matter who's the next coach, we'll see more Bolig. I mean, I hear him saying things and I'm watching the exact opposite win games in the NHL on the biggest stage.
Yeah, and it's are we still looking at Los Angeles? Are we still, because those are still big teams. Anaheim's still big teams, and those teams finished ahead of San Jose. That said, not by much, but you know, it's. And again, I think it speaks a little bit to the difference between the Pacific Division. Let's, I won't say the Western Conference. I'll say a difference between the Pacific Division and perhaps the perception of how you need to be built versus what's worked. And you look at how Tampa Bay got to the final, and you look at how Pittsburgh got to the final. So we'll see. I find it hard to believe that, you know, you got to have guys that you can play. You got to be able to skate. Like, everyone will admit that the game has gone significantly quicker over the last couple of seasons, and you can't just be a one-dimensional guy that can't play in a lot of situations, and you got to be able to play 11, 12 minutes if you're on a fourth line. You may not play that every night, but you got to be of that caliber. So seeing is believing if Brandon Bowling has a much bigger role with this team this season.
It does sort of reek of something you would like to say and get out there if you're shopping someone or trying to inflate their value, but it's also incredibly consistent with everything you said over the last decade. So, you know, there is that. If there was one thing about the Penguins that shocked me, you had sort of mentioned the young goalie thing. I don't think anyone would have gone away from Murray having watched him in the postseason. I know they did once, and they lost that game, and they went right back to him. I think he'd earned that more than sort of a philosophical decision on netminding. But the one thing that I was stunned by was this blue line on paper does not show you much, and yet somehow, some way, the Sharks generated so little through six games.
Yeah, no, exactly. And who are these guys, right? You know, Brian Dumoulin, you know, he played 188 games in the minors, but second round pick eventually came along and they found a spot and they played him with Letang. And yeah, no, I'm completely with you. It just shows that when you kind of have that depth and you have an anchor like Chris Letang, let's be honest. And you know, Chris Letang plays a lot of minutes, like probably just under 30 if you look back at his average ice time for the playoffs. So he plays a lot. But then you just look at the guys that surround him, and it's even doing it without Trevor Daley, because Trevor Daley was a big part of the rest of that supporting cast. But the Ben Lovejoys, Ian Coles, just amazing. It just speaks to when the team is kind of tied together, and again, that's why I'm with them on the Crosby for the Conn Smythe, because I just think he was the kind of straw that stirs the drink in terms of bringing all those guys together. From everything you heard from those that were covering it closer and were right there and going city to city, he just was a huge part of leadership and just kind of so committed. It was like he put this team on his back, to borrow a cliche.
I would suggest this was his bigger team victory. If you compared it to 09, it felt like there was more stars being stars. This was, their stars were still very good, but you saw significant contributions throughout the lineup. I know we wouldn't have believed it in December when this team was in shambles. They changed their coach. They made a couple swaps. Jim Rutherford could be very openly questioned about what was going on and how this was going to work out. But no denying this was the best team in hockey the last 2.5-3 months, hey?
Yeah, no, exactly. And, so this is, the Conn Smythe Trophy has come up a little bit in terms of conversation. If this is, to borrow an analogy, if this was a government, I don't see Crosby as a majority, getting in by majority, but, you know, I think Kessel's getting votes, I think Murray's getting votes. Heck, Letang probably could get votes, but you know, he was, you know, so that just speaks to what they had and what they brought right through the playoffs is there wasn't that one guy that made or break it. They, you know, and we haven't even mentioned a guy, you know, like think of the other supporting cast, Malkin, how good was Bonino, right? So it just, fully deserving of hoisting that Stanley Cup, in my opinion.
All right. Enough on that game. Just, you know, it was just a game in June. We don't need to, no big deal there. The Flames had their general manager on our very airwaves earlier this morning. Did you have a chance to listen in, and did we learn anything?
Yeah, I was listening in, and I think we learned a little bit. We kind of had them force their hand and get that press release out quick that we were mulling over on the weekend about the Czech goaltender. That was interesting, and it sounds like, he's got his guy in mind, just going through the formalities, it sounds like, so we should have a coach press conference within the next week or two. Before the draft, did he say that?
Yeah, he wants to get it done before the draft. It sounded like he was confident it would be done before the draft, but That said, everyone seems to forget that, okay, once you pick your guy, he doesn't just show up. Then you have to get a contract in place, and there's a lot of other work and people that obviously get involved at that point. I wouldn't be surprised if it was done by the end of the week. But that said, yeah, I think I'm confident they'll have one in place. It sounded like he was, too, by the time the draft gets around. The Rittich signing, the other thing he added was, well, he didn't add, someone added it. He's north of 200 pounds now. I know he's listed at like 165, like a beanpole with pads on. But just thoughts on the young Czech netminder, who I imagine will get all kinds of opportunities to play in the A this year.
Yeah, exactly. So I wrote, I did a bit of research and I kind of wrote something on the weekend that, so where is the state of the goal thing? This is kind of the first move in my eyes. And where this may have a tie in to Ordeo is not a one for one tie. And this is not because Ordeo is an NHL goaltender. He's coming off of one way contract. This is not a guy that's going to be in the conversation to be the starter. This guy's probably not even in the conversation to be the backup. He's coming over on a 1 year deal to play in the minors and if there's some promise there, he'll be an RFA. They can extend him. They can re-sign him. So it's that sort of thing. But I think where it gets interesting is he's 16 months younger than Ordeo. He might be kind of the next guy as kind of that buffer between until Gillies is ready as another option. And I don't know how long Ordeo's shelf life is in Calgary at this point. There are scenarios where I think Ordeo will be back, and that is scenarios where they bring in a legit number one goalie.
Yes.
That could be Marc-Andre Fleury. That could be Ben Bishop if that becomes available. Even, if Frederik Andersen, they can find a way to get him out of Anaheim. I think there are scenarios where Ordeo is the backup. They're looking at him for maybe 25 to 30 games max, where I think there would be comfort level. But if they're going to bring in someone else, that's more of a potential Martin Jones. Maybe it's a guy like Darcy Kemper, just for an example of someone that's similar age to what Jones was. I don't think there would be confidence there in saying, Ordeo, you're potentially our number one. You're going head to head with someone. I just don't know if they've seen enough from him and have enough confidence in him. So I think that really does hinge. I think Ordeo's fate maybe does hinge on what else happens and who they may bring in. That's just as I see it.
What does the Rittich signing mean for Mason McDonald, who can go back to junior? But boy, you'd love to see him turn pro for a lot of reasons. Just that, come on now, dominate a level, move to the next one. Dominate a level, move to the next one. What do you think happens with Mason McDonald as a result of this?
Yeah, so I still think Mason McDonald is ready to advance. Like he's been in the queue for four full seasons. You took him as the first goalie in the draft. I don't think you want to go back for an overage year. I don't think that's speaking about where he's at in my eyes. And so I would say Mason McDonald is your ECHL goalie. I would say he's the Adirondack starter next year. And I would say Rittich goes to Stockton. Him and Gillies are kind of the tandem. Now, Gillies is obviously going to get a majority of the playing time. And they do play a slightly reduced schedule, which is, I guess, cuts into the available playing time for Rittich. But I would think today that would be the plan. That makes the most sense to me. And again, at the NHL level, we'll see what they do, whether they bring in one guy or whether they bring in two guys. And I think that is what Ordeo's fate lands on. So it's not related to Ordeo, but it kind of is, if you know what I mean.
Someone threw this at me over the last couple of weeks. If you're Brad Treliving and I'm Jim Rutherford, and we're talking somehow, some way. Oh, congrats. Yeah. Oh, we'll see you at the draft. Oh, yeah. You guys, you don't have a first round or what do you want? All that stuff. Who would say no to Dennis Wideman, a second rounder for Marc-Andre Fleury? Would either GM really have say, I can't do that? That makes my team worse? Or does it not help both teams? I see a scenario like that being something that would be very difficult for either GM to say no to.
Yeah, no, I think there is some, it makes sense because Pittsburgh isn't necessarily in a cash crunch. If they want to add, then they'll need some money. And so Fleury off the books without a contract coming back would be a scenario they're maybe partial to. They just won the Stanley Cup. How many openings are there? And are they content with kind of the cast they have? Because they don't have a lot of contracts expiring. They don't need to clear up a lot of cap space. So in that regards, that would make sense. And I saw one of the Penguins beat writers last night talk to Fleury after the game, and you know, he didn't gush about the prospects of coming back and competing with Murray for a number one job. I mean, he's been the starter, and you get a sense that he might want out of Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh would be perfectly fine with bringing him back, but they've had a lot of loyalty to Fleury and back and forth, and I think if Fleury says, you know what, I'd rather move on, you can bet that they would try to accommodate him. There's lots of backups that they can bring in for less money.
Yes.
Absorbing a Dennis Wiedemann to throw on the blue line, that makes sense on a lot of levels. And one of their defensemen, Justin Schultz, is an unrestricted free agent, so there is going to be an opening. So, hey, you know, let's keep an eye on that one.
And similar profile, right? Offensively gifted defensemen that maybe you don't want a ton of ice time for in their own zone, but you'd love to see on the power play. I don't think that Schultz and Wiedemann are, you know, different corners of the universe in terms of how they play the game or where their strengths lie. The other thing I would suggest is, if someone suggests they really want Marc-Andre Fleury back, I would say, well, why would you waste that much money on a backup? I mean, you've only got so many dollars to spend a year, and you now have a window to move a guy. You might be stuck with this guy playing, you know, 15 to 25 games a year, making $6 million. If you have a chance to get rid of this guy this offseason, I think you have to jump at it. I think you have to look to do it. You don't hang around and see if someone calls. Matt Murray has clearly proven that he's the better of the two netminders at this juncture. I would suggest it's not crazy that he could come in and be a very capable starter. He just won a Stanley Cup. Why in the world, in terms of a cap management game, would you allocate $6 million or nearly that to a backup?
Yeah, and the pushback on that is, well, do we know what Matt Murray is quite yet? He's done this in the playoffs. He's only got 9 regular season wins, yada, yada, yada. But what my pushback to that would be, look, there's nothing in this guy's pedigree suggests he's not the guy. You look at his AHL records, they are off the charts. So, you know, I you always would like to have the backups to your backup to your backup to your backup, right? But it's a game. You have to manage your numbers. You have to manage your money and what makes most sense. And what makes most sense is, on the outside chance, this Matt Murray we've seen for 2 months is a fluke, we better keep Fleury. That's not how you need to run your organization. You got to look at other priorities.
Yeah, the contract's up for the Penguins. Bo Bennett, an RFA. He played one playoff game. Matt Cullen's a UFA. He's 39. I don't know that it would shock anyone if a 39-year-old who just won a second cup decided to retire. Kevin Porter, Tom Sestito, Kale Mularat, all guys that are UFAs that don't matter. They did not impact this club in the postseason. Justin Schultz, an RFA. Ben Lovejoy, a UFA. There is nothing out there where they need to spend a lot of dough. This is not like Tampa's offseason where Nikita Kucherov needs a new deal. This is not like, you know, the St. Louis Blues where their captain David Backes is a UFA and they've got 1 year away from big decisions. They could bring back his salary, but a year from now it gets more interesting. All of a sudden, if you want to keep Chris Kunitz around, he's going to need a paycheck. Nick Bonino's been great for them. He needs a brand new deal. Sheary will be an RFA. Also on the back end, Pouliot, Dumoulin need deals. Trevor Daly's contract expires. Matt Murray's going to need a new deal. That's in 2 summers. So if you don't have the Marc-Andre Fleury gone by next summer, you're in big trouble because you're not going to be able to afford some guys that are more crucial to their success, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then speaking to the validity of the Wiedemann for Fleury spirited swap is Wiedemann's contract is off the books by
there you
then.
Go.
So so you can certainly make a case, and I think it's a compelling one that makes sense on a lot of levels.
Interesting. What else is going up on the website? I imagine it sounds like the coaching search is getting very narrowed, and as we talked about, it could be this week. I'm sure we'll have a close eye on that, but what else has been keeping you busy with the draft now just a week and a half away?
Yeah, I looked at the draft late in the week last week, just looking again at who are the candidates that are likely to be available when the Flames pick at 6 and why these different names would be fits and if there's any reservations about them. So it's certainly draft talk, but there's going to be a condensed period of activity. You can just feel it, right? Between with the coach hiring, and then we're going to be right into the draft and 10 picks. Like, Calgary has not had 10 picks in a draft in 12 years. Now, will they make all 10? Probably not, but still, you know, you're probably looking at adding 7 or 8 players, There very likely could be trade activity. You know, a lot of that's now kind of where you look for deals to be made is on the draft floor and those conversations that get had leading up to that. So, yeah, looking for it. You know, it's interesting. We so many people saying, finally, the hockey season is over after last night's game. Well, for Calgary, now the hockey season is back on again. Like, there is going to be no shortage of activity between now and that first week of July.
Yeah, number 6 in round 1, then number 35 in round 2. They also acquired Florida's second rounder and Dallas's second rounder for the deals involving Hudler and Russell. Good catching up, sir. We'll do it again next Monday. I hope we are talking about a brand new head coach that you've done some exhaustive research on at that point.
Sounds good. And you know what? Maybe I've done already that research. We'll have to see who it is.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. All right, that's Darren Haynes. Thanks, buddy. He joins us on the South Street Burger guest hotline for South Street Burger. Enjoy a juicy burger with 100% Angus beef and a hand scoop milkshake. Kind of like that. Ooh. New location in East Hills. How about that? The South Street Burger guest hotline. Always good to catch up with Hansy on a Monday morning. And yeah, this is going to be a busy 2 weeks. You got 4 picks in the first 2 rounds. Do you keep them all? I don't know. You probably don't need 3 second rounders in terms of, you know, let's just fill the system with guys. If you could condense them to get a higher pick and a better probability of getting a really good player, I'm sure they'd love to do it. How far can you move up? Is it worth it? That becomes the whole question and the balancing and measuring game. Also, last year we saw them with a bunch of picks early, and 3 of them went to Boston for Dougie Hamilton, an impact player on the roster now, a unicorn, as Brad Treliving alluded to him, a young defenseman. They're like unicorns, not available, not readily available. So we'll see if he's got another deal up his sleeve at the draft. Does it involve a goalie, the coach, this cap pinch, and a potential expansion draft next summer? Can't wait. I really think it's going to be an unbelievable run-up to free agency. We'll step aside. When we get back, I ask you the question. If you're Brad Treliving and the deal on the table is Dennis Wiedemann and a second-round pick, let's say it's not your own, but one of Florida or Dallas's, later second-round pick, for Marc-Andre Fleury, do you say yes or no to that deal? Your answers when we come back. 960-960, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Brian Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Remember those books as a kid where you could, like, pick multiple endings? It's like, should he kill the dragon? Turn to page 48.
Choose your own adventure.
Does he run away from the dragon? Flip to page 74. Yeah, the choose your own adventure. That's what we're doing right now.
You died.
Oh, turn to page, throw the book in the garbage.
You still died.
You're dead. Here's your choose your own adventure for today. In this role-playing book, you are Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. There is a deal on the table in this book, this fictional book, this not nonfiction, Jay. This is completely fabricated. Dennis Wiedemann, a second rounder, go to the Pittsburgh Penguins, returning to the Calgary Flames, Marc-Andre Fleury. If you say yes, turn to page 48. If you say no, turn to page 72. So that is the question I have lobbed to you on this Monday. Chris, you can't ask the GM himself, who we had on earlier today. That would be tampering to discuss players under contract of other clubs. If you missed that, by the way, a half hour with the GM of the Flames. Up on the website, Jay? Almost up on the website. Already up. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well done. Confirming David Rittich has been signed. The Czech netminder, 6'4", 200 pounds. I believe 23, 24 is the age. That's actually 2 ages I gave you, so I don't know the age. But one of those 2 is the correct answer. The question is the correct answer saying yes or no to the Marc-Andre Fleury deal I have proposed? That's an easy trade to make from the text line, 960-960. Oh my goodness, look at this. We've got dozens upon dozens of texts pouring in. Let's rattle through some. I would do that deal every day of the week. The one thing that's interesting about it is that if I had asked you which netminder the Flames should target, I don't think many of you would jump to Fleury immediately. But when you frame it around the price of the acquisition, all of a sudden I think it is much more appetizing. But if you go and get Marc-Andre Fleury, you're not also going to go get Ben Bishop. You're not also going to pursue Frederick Anderson. You're not also going to bring in Brian Elliott. I would imagine it would be Fleury, and you would qualify and retain Ortio to play as a backup. Let's read some of the responses. The deal for Fleury, yes, in a heartbeat. He's a number one goalie, a guy we won't re-sign, and a pick that has less than a 50% chance of being a player. Where is the argument against this? The only argument against it would be if you don't like Fleury. If you feel like that's not a big enough upgrade in net. I don't think anyone's upset about the final year of Dennis Wiedemann. He's going to leave as a free agent anyway, I'd expect. I don't think anyone is stomping their feet at losing a late second rounder. And the guy nailed it. It is less than 50%. On a 200-game career, if that's your threshold, you're talking from about somewhere to 25 to 33% at that stage of the third round, or the second round, excuse me, late in the second round. So you've got a 1-4 to a 1-3 chance of hitting. Now, it doesn't mean that that pick you give away won't be a player. It absolutely could be. It's just the odds of that player becoming impactful aren't great. So it's an interesting question, right? I mean, how could you say no to that? You must have a better deal in place or have a better goaltender you're targeting, or maybe you just say, look, like that's a heck of a deal, but I'm really, really into goaltender X. And if we get Fleury, we can't also bring in this other guy. You can't be spending $11 million on goalies if you're going to bring in Ben Bishop and Marc-Andre Fleury, right? Let's read some more here. Wide dog for Fleury, good trade. But do we have enough cap room for the rest? Well, it's almost cash neutral. So, Wide Dog's 5-2-5 up at the end of the year. Fleury 5-7-5, 3 years left. So, for the upcoming season, it's only $500,000. Almost nothing. And with Ortio, I would imagine, coming in around $1 million or less, you would have a goaltending tandem for less than $7 million. I believe they spent $9 million last year on, what was it, 4.5 for Hiller, 3.8 for Ramo. Big numbers. Almost $9 million, I guess. An emphatic yes to the Wiedemann and a later second rounder for Fleury. His concussion's a little bit of a concern, but the same can be said for Reimer as well, who's out there as a UFA. Ideally, Anderson's the guy, but if you can get someone else like Marc-Andre Fleury for a late second rounder and move the Wiedemann contract, you're still getting a quality goalie with elite years, and you're not overpaying like you would have to get the goalie out of Anaheim. A lot of people saying yes to this. Here's some no's. No to Marc-Andre Fleury. Too much money over the next 3 years. Flames are in the driver's seat as it relates to netminding, thanks to the potential expansion draft. Cheaper options will be available. Well, what do you mean by cheaper, right? Because there's what a guy makes in salary, and then there's the price of doing a transaction. I understand goalies that make less money are out there, but I don't know that you're going to be able to move Wiedemann in a second rounder and pick up Ben Bishop or pick up Brian Elliott or pick up Frederick Anderson. But the texter continues. If all else fails, you can sign Reimer. I'm sure we could get him at $3 million for less money than Fleury. And we need to save money to sign Johnny, Monty, and then Bennett is next year. Cash will be tight. Yeah, next year I'm not so worried about. You've got Mason Raymond coming off the books. You have Derek Englund's contract coming off the books. Ladislav Schmid's money coming off the books. I mean, right there, we just saved $10 million, I think. Right? Bolig should be done by then. There's 11. Like, there is all kinds of relief coming next summer. You just have to get there. This summer's the pinch. And then you've also got 2 more years of Matt Stajan. Thank you, Berkey. That's a horrible trade for the Penguins, writes this texter. I don't know if it is. What are they? They've replaced Justin Schultz. They've bought themselves cap space, not for this year, but in 2 years, or next summer, when Wiedemann's off. And they've already got a number one goalie. Fleury's redundant there. You don't need two guys like that, do you? I mean, if they're both cheap, you do. You love them. You keep them. But with one making 5.75, the cap space is the greatest asset that Pittsburgh picks up. They also get a draft pick. They don't have a lot of those. They've been moving those regularly at the deadline the last few years. I would do that Wiedemann for Fleury deal in a heartbeat, Pinder. Hey, guys, how did the Flames pass over both Martin Jones and Matt Murray? Jones' draft year, the Flames picked Tim Erickson. Murray's draft year, Flames picked Jankowski. Well, yeah, they could have taken Jones in the 7th round that year if they wanted. Anyone could have. He was undrafted. Bottom line, his draft year, most scouts didn't think he was going to be a good goalie, or they would have drafted him. Not just the Flames here. Doesn't Dennis Wiedemann have a no movement clause? Well, they both actually, I believe, have some form of a contract. What would you call it? Impingement? I don't know. It's a no movement clause for Dennis Wiedemann. And Marc-Andre Fleury has the list of 10 teams, I believe. But I get the sense that in the final year of his deal, and with all that went down last year with Don Henderson, that I don't think it would be hard to convince Dennis Wiedemann to go play for the defending Stanley Cup champs if that was is what you're concerned with. And for Marc-Andre Fleury to go to a place and start would probably be attractive, because I don't think he's going to do it in Pittsburgh next year if he's there. The deal isn't a bad deal, but I don't think Fleury is the answer, Pinder. So I don't think I'd take the deal because it seems easy. Well, yeah, that's the whole conundrum, right? If I asked you if Marc-Andre Fleury is the guy they should target, you'd all say no. But when I offer it in the context of the deal, all of a sudden it's harder to say no, isn't it? Like, that's a pretty good deal. You can get a starter for Dennis Wiedemann in a second. That's amazing. There's no way that you can do that with Anaheim, right? If you're trying to get Freddie Anderson, they're going to ask for number six. If you're going to get Freddie Anderson, ask yourself what you have to give Anaheim to help them win a cup next year, because that's what they're going to want. So a collection of second rounders and some guys in the A is not the correct answer in terms of what Anaheim would be looking for. That's going to be a very expensive ad. And I've been lobbying for Frederik Anderson all season. Just going to be expensive. We'll continue to read those texts, but we have to take a break. When we come back, it is your ATB golf tip of the week. Going to try to connect with Riley Fleming. A couple weeks under his belt on the McKenzie Tour, the PGA of Canada Tour. They started out in Vancouver, off to Victoria last week at Gallagher's Canyon in Kelowna. Our buddy was playing on the weekend, posted a 200 yesterday on Sunday. Pretty good. We'll check in with him next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
.948 on your Monday. I think we got a poll question for tomorrow if Boomer will allow it. Dennis Wiedemann and a late second rounder to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Marc-Andre Fleury. Would you do that if you're a Brad for a living? Would it scare you? Would you be already faxing things to the NHL office with your signature on them? I wonder. Quick Euro update. 1-0 your final from earlier today. Spain beats the Czech Republic. Republic of Ireland is set to take on Sweden, and Belgium, Italy is later today at 1 o'clock. Riley Fleming joins us on the phone line. Are you watching any Euro? Are you Dutch? Are you English in descent? Do you have a team you root for, sir?
I'm Scottish in descent, but Scottish. I'm not a big soccer fan.
And the Scots didn't make it. The Welsh did. The Northern Ireland, Ireland. Oh, it's a shame. Well, at least you're not missing anything, I guess, right?
No, not too much.
Hey, good catching up with you. The McKenzie Tour is underway. You've got three events under your belt. How are things going?
Not too bad. Unfortunately, I missed the cut in the first two. I did make the cut this last week going Kelowna. Actually, I played pretty well the first 2 days, and then I got a bit of a tough break with the weather. Played a couple of really nasty days in the rain, Friday, Saturday. But ended up finishing 32nd and kind of got the year started. So.
Good, yeah. No, and I knew that... You were excited about getting to the weekend. That's—I don't know if that's a mental hurdle or if that's something where it's like, okay, this is kind of my career. I got to make a living, which means getting to weekends. But how happy were you with getting to a Saturday? Never mind the results after that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's one of the few jobs in the world where you're praying you work the weekend every week.
yes.
And in Vancouver, I missed a shot or missed the cut by one shot, and actually by one player too. So I was still close right there to, you know, come out of the gates hot. And but you know, it didn't work out. And then but Kelowna this week, I took care of that, and I never even had to worry about the cut. I played so well, and so I made it a little bit easier. And now I can, you know, now I got something I can build on the rest of the year.
For sure. How's it been so far? I know you started in Vancouver, off to Victoria. Always good to be on the island, and then. The Okanagan's always beautiful this time of year. Are you feeling good about your game? Is it a nice cast of characters? We saw some crazy low scores a couple weekends ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, even this weekend, the course was just set up. It was set up really well, and with the rain, it, you know, never was able to get really firm. And it was just a wedge fest, mountain golf course, which I haven't really played a lot of. I'm not used to the greens with the, you know, as much break as these ones had and stuff. So it was a little bit difficult. I didn't really make a lot all week, which was a little frustrating because, as obviously the leaders did, Dan ran away with it, finishing at, I think, 25 under, which is absurd. But, you know, he's playing well. He's won two of the first three events, so he's rather hot right now.
What's at stake here, if you can tell our listeners? Your Mackenzie Tour, PGA Tour of Canada, used to be called just the Canadian Tour, but it's invites to other leagues. It's obviously cash as well, exemptions of sorts. So walk us through it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the big picture is top five at the end of the year will get starts on the web.com tour. So that's what everyone's chasing. Another thing is the top three after Thunder Bay get exempt into the Canadian Open, which is obviously a big deal as well. So there's lots of different things to play for. And then each week, you know, there's a $2,500 bonus for low Canadian. And at the end of the year, there's a $25,000 bonus for low Canadian for the whole year. So, you know, there's lots to chase.
What does 25 grand mean? I know that for all of us, we can put a value on that, but we don't know what it costs to travel across the country all summer. As a golfer, we also don't understand what sort of sponsorship or support a golfer of your caliber on that tour would have. What does 25 grand mean if for that low Canadian at the end of the year?
I mean, 25,000 for if you pinch your pennies and you do it right, would easily pay for probably your whole year of expenses, close to it, at least up in Canada, and then your Q school fees. It wouldn't pay for your winter wherever you go. You have to, you know, that wouldn't be covered, but, if you do it properly, I'm one of the cheaper guys on tour. I drive my car as much as I can. I don't go out and eat, you know, out very much. I keep the beer drinking to a minimum, which helps. And, you know, I do it for quite a bit less. You know, I think last year I spent about $12,000 on tour when I had the next closest I heard was $22,000. And then the highest I heard was $47,000 in 12 weeks, which is, you know, pretty crazy.
You're seeing some things. You're doing some stuff at 50 grand for 12 weeks.
Living the life.
Yeah, right on, man. Well, why don't we get into it? As part of the lead up to the ATP Financial Classic, which you'll be participating in and have for the last few years, I believe at Country Hills this year, the Talons, which should be really tough, we are doing ATP Golf Tips Weekly. So without further ado, Jay, hit the button.
ATB Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best tee it up at the ATB Financial Classic, August 11th to 14th at Country Hills.
Again, chatting with Riley Fleming after three events. He'll be in town for the ATB Financial Classic come August. They changed the dates with what happened in Fort Mac. That event is off the calendar. It's going to allow for a little more time for travel for you guys. But I wanted to ask you, for a lot of us, we play in men's nights. We've got a weekend game. Maybe we just go with buddies, but then once or twice a year, we'll get into tournament play. Let's say, for example, a club championships. Maybe it's something like the Black Wolf tournament. I've got a match today. Do you have any tips in terms of just approaching things a little bit differently, regular buddy golf into tournament play?
Yeah, absolutely. The difference between regular golf and tournament golf, obviously, is the pressure level. You know, there's not a lot of pressure there when you're playing with friends for maybe a couple bucks or a beer or something. There's not a lot of pressure there. But when you're under the gun, everything moves faster. I was thinking it reminded me of public speaking as a kid. You may read your speech at home and it'll take you 5 minutes, and then you get on stage and it takes you 2 minutes, and it just flies by. And that's kind of what I think pro golf is like, or, you know, competitive golf even. I was guilty of it in Victoria. I lost my tempo. I started moving too quick, rushed everything. And, you know, before I knew it, I missed the cut after shooting a really good first round. So I think the key to playing competitive golf, or even if it's only once or twice a year, is just to remember, take that extra breath, slow down, you know, stick to that routine that you've kind of developed during your friendly golf. And just, you know, making sure you don't come out of it. And if you do notice you're coming out of it, you got to figure out a way to slow down a little bit, either walk slower, you know, take two extra breaths before you hit the ball, or just, you know, slow down the whole tempo, the whole process.
I could see it getting away from you too. Like you mentioned in week one, and you said, geez, like I'm too quick through here. Like I'm rushing things. But, and then you're thinking about that, and there's a whole other layer of the just thinking about moving too quick, even if you are or not. I mean, it becomes a mental thing quickly, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And so like I said, in Victoria, when I kind of lost it there for the 18 holes. It was the whole round was like a blur. It just went by, and before I knew it, I was well outside the cut line. I didn't even have a chance of making it. And so going into Kelowna this week, the only swing thought I had was just slow back to the top of my backswing as I could get, and then just, you know, rip at it from there. But that, for me, that was my key. I just needed to think, okay, nice and slow, take it all the way back to the top, and then I could be aggressive with it. You know, and some people, like, I have a quick tempo, so my slow is not going to be someone else's slow or whatever. But, you know, it helped me, and that's, you know, get through the cut and not have to worry about it, really. Just one simple little thought, it goes a long way.
Busy week for you coming up. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm heading to Red Deer tomorrow morning to play in the Red Deer Skins game. This will be the second year I've played it now. A really cool event that's held at the Red Deer Country Club. Me and a couple other Albertans are going up, Scott Stiles, Ryan Weary, and then Ontario, Michael Glegic is joining us, and we're playing up there. I think the Skins game's tomorrow around 5 o'clock or something. And then I got to head after that. I got to go to Edmonton next Monday to play in the Alberta Open again.
Good, right on. And then the next tour stop comes, there's a bit of a break here. You got a couple weeks off. Dakota Dunes in Saskatoon for the open there. Do you enjoy this portion here? Is this window there for a reason in terms of nothing between the 12th and the 23rd?
Yeah, it's, you know, you get 3 weeks on and you kind of get a little bit of a break. It's nice to be back in Alberta. I actually don't really feel like I'll have that much time off because I'll play the Open next Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I'll have to drive from Edmonton to Saskatoon Wednesday night. I won't get a practice round in Saskatoon, and I'll just have to peg it Thursday morning. And so that'll seem a little rushed. But, you know, at this point of my career, you can't really turn down the opportunity to make some money. So I got to go do some work in Edmonton, and then I'll go do some work in Saskatoon.
Good catching up with you, man. We wish you some greens, some big checks before you get to Saskatoon, and obviously all very excited to see you when you rip through town for the ATB Financial Classic come early August. Always good catching up.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Riley Fleming. Catch him on Twitter at Flemmer Golf, and that is your ATB Golf Tip for the week.
ATB Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best teed up at the ATB Financial Classic August 11th to 14th at Country Hills.
Yes, and those dates are wrong. 11th to 14th in the tags there. Those need to be changed with the fires in Fort McMurray. The fire in Fort McMurray, that event is not happening. So they bumped up the ATB Financial Classic from the 4th to the 7th of August. Do note that. And I'll send another email to make sure we get the right dates on the tags. It's 9:58. We'll come back tomorrow and continue the conversation. Will Marc-Andre Fleury be a flame? Can the Jays stay hot? And, of course, we'll continue to look at the potential coaches for the Calgary Flames. It might be by the end of the week, new head coach for the hometown club. This is your home of the Flames, Sports at 960, The Fan.